Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in since they going back to showing action tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the Anime Action Fan Sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I'm, of course, your primetime host, Thomas Prime Time Mattis, and I welcome you to episode 82 of The Prerogative. This week I have one more last Christmas gift for you before we end out the old 2013 and jump right into the brand new 2014, which will probably completely screw up by day two. This Christmas gift, as I wanted to get out last week, dig out at the beginning of this week, for many reasons, like bad audio, but that's here or there. The last Christmas gift is a classic Hanna-Barbera Christmas special that has a lot of nostalgic feeling for me. Very difficult to review because I had to judge a lot of things. It is one of the three Yogi Bear holiday specials that came out around 1979, 1980, and 1982 to be exact. And of course, I'm talking about the 1981 Yogi Bear's First Christmas. As I said, a lot of nostalgia around this for many reasons. And, you know, again, Hanna-Barbera being a classic American animation company, you know, with this we'll cover at least three of, like, the big American animation companies, at least up until 2000 they were. And Warner Brothers, Hanna-Barbera / Universal. I've always, like, connected Hanna-Barbera with Universal, I guess it's because they had a ride there, but that's besides the point. And MGM, for that matter. So, all of them except Disney we've covered on the holiday season now. So, we're going to get into that review of Yogi Bear's First Christmas in just a bit. Like I said, it was very hard for the nostalgia factor and to judge. Is this good? Is this not? Do I have to put this, again, one of those situations of, like, this is the time and place of this animation, and so on and so on. Like I said, we're going to get into all of that when we get into the review. But like I said, first, I kind of want to go into that nostalgia factor, because that's a big part about watching these holiday specials. I mean, whether it's watching the Thanksgiving Charlie Brown special, whether it's watching the Polar Express, whether it's watching Yogi's First Christmas, among other things. A lot of it has the nostalgia factor of, you know, we remember, usually as kids, sitting down and watching the show. And this was a bit, especially with Yogi Bear's First Christmas, it was a big thing, because I remember going back, I want to say 93, maybe 94, when we first got cable and I first got Cartoon Network. And I remember standing around the fall time And so it was that lead up to all the holiday stuff until you first had the Halloween stuff, which was cool. Again, this is also Nickelodeon, back when Nickelodeon had very cool Halloween specials. Of course, that's also back when they had Nick Jr. and actually had good stuff. It wasn't 24 hours of SpongeBob and Hey Fred and the stuff they have on now. I'm talking about good stuff like Eureka's Castle. And yes, I still remember Eureka's Castle. I wish they would release it on DVD. And I still sing the theme song of Eureka's Castle. You know, picnic time, Eureka's Castle, picnic time, Eureka's Castle. Okay. I'm getting a bit off track and I apologize, but again, you had the Halloween special, which was, that's one of the best sort of kid-friendly Halloween specials I think I've still ever seen, is from Eureka's Castle. But of course, like I said, it was the lead up to all those specials, of course, going to Thanksgiving, you had a couple, and then, to an extent, Thanksgiving, or as, you know, Angelica once said on the Rugrats Hanukkah special, you know, Hanukkah, you know, it's the start of the Christmas holiday special season. That's when the holiday specials start. And in getting Cartoon Network, you know, I was privy to a whole new variety of different holiday specials. Because again, I only had Nickelodeon up to that point, so I'd only seen the Nickelodeon stuff. But now I had, and my mind opened to the Hanna-Barbera stuff that I had missed, because again, a lot of it came out before I was born. Or some of it coming out when I was born, but we didn't have it. And of course, Cartoon Network re-showing it, being that it had the Hanna-Barbera catalog. So getting to see things like Yogi Bear's First Christmas, Yogi Bear's Christmas Caper, all the Flintstones holiday stuff, and individual specials like a Pac-Man Christmas, the First Christmas Elf, which again is still it's a great sort of half-hour special about the First Christmas Elf, about this troll who's different from everybody else. He gets banished from Troll Mountain and he becomes Santa's first elf. So many different specials, and of course not all from Hanna-Barbera, but a large part of them from Hanna-Barbera. You have the Scooby-Doo sort of holiday special from the new Scooby-Doo show that was in the 80s, which I still love that theme. So, you know, Scooby-Dooby-Doo, looking for you. Scooby-Doo, where are you?
Fuck you. Who cares?
Come on, Scooby, where you been? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Trouble's on loose again. Scooby, they're not gonna get you. Scooby Doo, Scrappy's gonna save ya. Scooby, and Shaggy's gonna be there. Scooby Doo, and Daphne too. Scooby Dooby Doo, looking for you. Scooby Dooby Doo, where are you? Yeah, I didn't think I need to put down the remote. Yeah. By the way, and I know I'm completely off topic here. That's the show that put in my mind that, yeah, Daphne probably would have ended up with Shaggy. I know, like, Fred left to be a TV producer, Velma went to NASA, but yeah, still, she stuck around with Shaggy. That should tell you something. But that's, you know, that are off the point, completely off cop. Again, back to holiday specials. Again, the reason I went into that little diatribe, the Nutcracker Scoop, which was a great episode of that series, I thought. It's a very fun episode, I find. But so, all these holiday specials, and just, again, I remember 93, 94, and on, you know, I always look forward to the holiday season. Looking forward to the holiday. I mean, mind you, the holiday seasons are more than that, but especially as a kid, you look forward to the holiday specials. And as an adult, again, it's that nostalgic feel of watching these specials. And, you know, are they the greatest mind-blowing things in the world? No. And I think that's something that we have to put in mindset with some of this stuff, is that, again, we're reviewing it, But we're not trying to, again, it's something I'm not trying to do. I'm not trying to review something based on, is everything the greatest in the world? I'm reviewing it, does it accomplish stuff? Is it fun to watch? Is it enjoyable? You know? And then maybe tackle the politics around it, you know, sometimes why some stuff are bad and why some stuff is good. You know, like, for instance, the frog, because, you know, Disney promotion completely screwed up promoting Princess Frog. Again, completely off topic, and I apologize. Again, it's just this nostalgic feel, and that was something I enjoyed in watching today's review of the movie, Yogi Bear's First Christmas. Is, again, it brought me back to that nostalgic feel. You know, Yogi Bear's First Christmas, which was fun. Yogi Bear's Christmas Caper, which had, again, all of the cameos. Again, understanding the idea that the whole point of a crossover is the fun of seeing characters that normally wouldn't be together, and seeing all the Hanna-Barbera, you know, seeing Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble with Yogi Bear and Boo Boo. The Pac-Man Christmas, which is just fun and weird, and especially once you get older, it still has a nostalgic feel. The Flintstone Christmas specials, including the half-hour one from the actual series, and then the hour-long special one, which basically have the same plot. just so much fun. And, of course, all the new holiday specials that have come from Cartoon Network. The Ed, Edd n Eddy one, the Johnny Bravo one, which is absolutely hilarious. The Powerpuff Girls one, the Billy and Mandy one, which is awesome because it's got Gilbert Gottfried as Santa Claus. How could you hate Gilbert Gottfried as Santa Claus? You don't have a soul if you hate Gilbert Gottfried as Santa Claus. That's like saying George Carlin sucks. But I digress. Again, just, it was wonderful to have this nostalgic feel. And allow me to go on to this rant about the nostalgic feel of going back and watching, remembering my childhood of sitting in front of the TV every holiday season and watching all the classic Hanna-Barbera cartoons, which is, that's a big thing. Hanna-Barbera did so many Christmas specials. I think they're actually one of the big animation. Probably Disney's done more now, but I do definitely think that in the 90s, by that time, it was like, I think Hanna-Barbera did the most holiday specials. So we're going to get into that. Also, another thing before we get into the review is that I'm really looking forward to is when we get to acting, because we're going to get a chance to talk about some voice actors, I think, who get really overlooked for the work they did with the Hanna-Barbera stuff that are just amazing voice actors. Including a man who I think is the quintessential voice, as far as I'm concerned, of Santa Claus. But like I said, we're going to get into all that in the review. I can't wait. So, let's get on to our review, shall we, of Yogi Bear's First Christmas. Yogi Bear's First Christmas starts with Huckleberry Hound, Snagglepuss, Augie Doggie, and Augie Daggie coming to Jellystone Park to stay at the Jellystone Lodge with, of course, Ranger Smith. Unfortunately, the lodge manager, Mr. Dingwell, has a bit of a bad news. Because of multiple seasons of mysterious stuff and dwindling attendance to the lodge, the owner of the lodge, Mrs. Throckmorton, is deciding to sell the lodge to the county, as they want to make a new highway that runs through Jellystone Park. Of course, the sort of good news they have is that Mr. Dingwell hopes that by showing Miss Throckmorton a good holiday season, as she is coming to visit with her bratty nephew, Snively, that maybe they can save the lodge. And of course, the gang is all hung-ho and filled with Christmas spirit and ready to show Miss Throckmorton a good time. And of course, this leads them to start singing. Well, the joyful music makes its way to the cave of one smarter than the average bear, Yogi Bear, and his little pal Boo Boo. And they are woken up, and in discovering that they have woken up just in time for Christmas, Yogi Bear decides he is going to stay awake and make it through Christmas, as he's never experienced it. This, of course, is joyful news to the gang of Huckleberry, Snagglepuss, and Augie and Doggie, as they are overwhelmed with the ability to celebrate Yogi Bear's first Christmas.
It's starting to snow again.
See you under that mistletoe again. Coming up Christmas time. It's time to buy those Christmas gifts. The body shop is free.
Make sure I get what I want. I buy my gift for me.
It's about that time for apple and reindeer.
And let's get started as we always do with music. Now, of course, listening to music, it's classic Hanna-Barbera music done by Hoyt Curtin. Of course, lyrics by Hanna-Barbera. The thing about the music here, though, it has a special charm added on to it with the sort of more Christmas feel to the music. Mind you, you have a lot of songs, you know, the mistletoe song, you have, you know, coming up on Christmas time, making a big ado about Christmas. It was also featured in Casimir's First Christmas. And it's that same sort of feel. First of all, it's classics on a Hanna-Barbera sort of music, as I said. Which, again, it's that sort of, whereas Disney was sort of classic orchestra and that stuff, same with MGM, Hanna-Barbera had more of that sort of small band, jazz band, blues and folk music type of feel to its music and its shows. So you take that and then you add Christmas sounds to it, you know, sort of, you know, the bells and the percussion and more trumpets. Not that there isn't enough trumpets to jazz, but trumpets along, I think, with more sort of winds. Winds and, mind you, when I say trumpets and brass, I'm talking about light brass. You know, not big brass, but light brass. You know, trombones are not as prevalent there. I mean, they're there, but not as prevalent. I want to say tenor trumpets. I'm blanking completely, and I apologize. But as opposed to something like tuba, you know, and tubas are there, but they're more in the background and they're lighter, and they're not as heavy. If you understand what I'm trying to say, is if it's more of that, you know, jazz band, that marching band type of feel to where, you know, you don't have as many tuba. If you're doing a big orchestra and it's sort of grand jazz, you're going to have a lot more tubas and trombones and a lot more harmony there. Here, the lighter instruments are, you know, it's more of a marching band. The lighter instruments are taking more of a sort of stand in there. You don't have so much of a balance between the instruments because, again, the lighter sort of, not as big, but louder and lighter brass are taking root. And I probably no one completely understands what I'm saying, but, you know, that aspect of it, along with the bells and sort of the winds and the sort of the simple sort of what we consider sort of winter sounds and the Christmas sounds added onto it, just, I think, creates some very, very fun Christmas songs. You know, coming up on Christmas time, it's just a fun song. And listening to the Hanna-Barbera characters sing it, that's the other aspect of this, is that, you know, you're listening to Huckleberry Hound sing. Oh, my darling, oh, my darling, oh, my darling Clementine. Na, 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 oh, my darling Clementine. I'm sorry, I had a retro flashback. But again, obviously, you know, listen to him sing, listen to Boo Boo, and know, Snagglepuss and Doggy Daddy. You know, listening to these characters, these beloved characters sing, is always fun to listen to. And like I said, the songs are just fun romps throughout the special. Again, it's that more classic cartoon style of using music, or at least for this type of style, it'd be classic. Whereas the songs are sort of, you know, obviously they're probably releasing the CD later, and they're there, and, you know, it's advertising maybe that future CD while having them part of the special. But at the same time, they work very, very much well. They have story elements in them that they do tell. Even if that story is for that one scene, what they're trying to tell. Whether that story be, you know, making a big ado about Christmas, you know, is putting the ornaments on the tree, or coming up on Christmas time, just being a joyful story of people being joyful to be in Jellystone Park. So it does fit that. I think one thing about this special is, you know, for a younger audience, they may who not grown up with this stuff, that are not gonna maybe get it and not appreciate it as much and not see it as good. And so it definitely has that aged factor where to a younger generation, to future generations, it may not be as appreciative. It may not be understood. But I found it to be enjoyable. I thought the songs were good. I love the Christmas feel to them. And again, just classic Hanna-Barbera music in the background. It's pretty fun to listen to. Of course, again, adding the Christmas feel to it with the bells and everything. Moving on to animation. Again, classic Hanna-Barbera animation. This is the... I consider it sort of the classic period. About 1975 to 1990. You know, 1960 was sort of that beginning period. And I know that may be hard to think of. But like when you look at Yogi Bear early on and... well, not 1960, I'd go to 1950s. I try to put ages on Hanna-Barbera. I'm just going to quit while I'm ahead. So, stuff to say, you know, when you really think of what we think of classic-looking Hanna-Barbera characters, you know, this time period, the 70s, basically the 70s from, like, 1970 to 1980 is where the classic Hanna-Barbera look was culminated. And it again, the more cartoony head of Yogi Bear as to the more sort of curvy head of Yogi Bear that he had early on in his cartoons. So that more cartoony feel, that classic, like I said, the classic look of Hanna-Barbera in the characters. And just all the classic Hanna-Barbera animation techniques. Again, it's whether you enjoy it. Again, it's that unique feel that's, to put it in a word, it's jazzy. It's jazzy and it's cartoony. It's that Hanna-Barbera style. And that's the thing about all the characters. You know, Huckleberry Hound looks like Huckleberry Hound. The classic character that, you know, if you saw it, you would say Huckleberry Hound. Again, this is the hard part about reviewing this stuff because these are iconic characters. And their character designs are lovely. You can see why these character designs have worked over the years because they are just, you know, the shapes are simple, the line work is gorgeous, and they're just simple character designs that work for each character. The color schemes work because, again, it gives it that different feel as opposed to a Disney or an MGM or a Warner Brothers. You know, Hanna-Barbera did a great job in designing its characters so that it would have such a great distinctive feel to them. The action animation was just fun because, again, the action animation of having these kooky things happen and everything, it all flowed perfectly, even if a lot of times they were using, or at least some places, sort of classic restocked footage. But, you know, whether it be a snowball coming down the mountain or whether it be Yogi skating and everything, there's just a classic cartoon Hanna-Barbera feel to it that just is fun to watch. And last but not least, we have backgrounds and special effects. And the special effects were good. I mean, they're not as detailed as we would see, like, now. You know, again, this being a cartoon, special effects are very light and not used heavily. But at the same point in time, you know, the snow effects and all of that stuff, and the snow, or should I say snow animation, and all of those types of animations were done very well. And the backgrounds were really well done. Again, that classic Hanna-Barbera feel to the backgrounds. One thing I liked is really you felt like you were looking at a different Jellystone Park, as opposed to what you would see in the Yogi Bear cartoons. It felt like they expanded the whole idea of what Jellystone Park is, and I liked it about the backgrounds with the different sort of locations, the mountains, whether it be the mountain in which Herbert the Hermit lives on, or the mountain they're sneaking off of, the pond, the lodge. It just feels like a different area of Jellystone that really we've not been able to explore in past Yogi Bear cartoons. So I like that aspect of it. At the end of the day, the animation, which I don't have much to say because, again, it's that nostalgic feel, and I think I just have to sort of, again, this is what I've been struggling with in doing this review, obviously. But it's one of those things to where I just have to accept, like, this is iconic characters. There's really not much to say other than acknowledge exactly why they've done so well for so long and why they've been so popular in our part of American pop culture, because they're simple, they're clean, the line work is great, the color schemes work for the characters, the more sort of bright colors that, you know, go with Hanna-Barbera. All of it sort of screams Hanna-Barbera to me and to anybody growing up. As to somebody who's not grown up with Hanna-Barbera, I don't know. And I think that's the one maybe thing. Is, again, all of Hanna-Barbera, how well would it age? Or at least these things. I mean, Scooby-Doo will always age well because there's always been new Scooby-Doo and it's always been evolving. But for some of the stuff that's maybe not had some recent stuff out there, how well will it age? If the Yogi Bear movie that came out a couple years ago is any indication, not very well. But again, that's getting into a point that's here nor there for a Christmas special. End of the day, I love the animation. Classic Hanna-Barbera cartoon animation. It's just fun and wonderful to look at. So, with that, time for a break, time for commercials, time for to let you know of all the great podcasts that do so much of a better job than I do. So I'm going to play some promos for some of my friends, and when we come back, we're going to get into acting and into story. After these messages, we'll be right back.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I am a terrible geek. I don't watch Doctor Who, I don't care for anime, I've never seen any of the Harry Potter films, much less read the books. I like Star Wars and Star Trek okay, but I've never really ventured far into the extended universes of either property. Hell, I have never even watched a single episode of The Walking Dead. So what do I like?
Comic books.
I have been reading and collecting comic books since 1987, and I have been a fan of superheroes for as long as I can remember. Some would consider this a hobby, but I prefer to look at it as what it truly is, a crippling addiction that I may never recover from. To deal with this borderline personality disorder, I started a podcast in 2007 called
Views from Long Lost.
Every 2 weeks, or so, depending on real life, I pick a particular series, or issue, or character, or whatever to talk about, and then I talk about them, because that's kind of the point of a podcast. Sometimes I'm alone. Sometimes I have a guest, like my semi-regular co-host, the Irredeemable Shag, or my other semi-regular co-host, Thomas DJ, or with another friend from the podcasting world. The show is located at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com. And from there you can find the iTunes link, the email address, as well as the backlog of episodes.
Views from the Long Box.
A podcast about comics or a desperate cry for help. You decide. Every other Tuesday, or so, depending on real life, at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com. ChefPlus.com.
I guess you weren't so tough after all, were you? Now it's time to send you to the next dimension.
291 original episodes.
This can't be! It's still going up!
325 manga chapters.
You act innocent, but you're deadly.
Time to die!
Dozens of characters, hundreds of enemies, and a whole lot of violence.
That kind of violence is pointless!
You see, Super Saiyans tend to be a bit violent.
Oh, crap!
Join hosts Donovan and Jesse as they cover the arrival of the Saiyans, the journey to Namek, the battle with Frieza, the mystery of the androids, and the terror of Majin Buu.
I lied when I said you could go. At least partially lied, for I will let you go to another dimension.
The Next Dimension, a Dragon Ball Z podcast. Join the fight at dbznextdimension.libsyn.com.
See ya.
Okay, let's get this show on the road, gang.
I'm Batman.
This looks like a job for Superman.
Comics Monthly Mondays, available the third Monday of every month at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.
And welcome back, and let's get right back into it with acting. Now, I've been really looking forward to talking about acting. Though with that, I do want to apologize once again for my stumbling and all incoherentness, and I know I'm incoherent a lot of times, but, you know, animation was really hard to look at, or I should say review and critique, because I think I had an epiphany while talking about it as well. It's just one of those things, like, these are iconic characters, there's not much to talk about. I wish I could have a much more deeper discussion about it, but there's really nothing deep to have it. They're fun character designs, bright, colorful, iconic. And I just have to accept there's not much to talk about other than that. But with acting, here's something I will be able to talk a bit more about, because it is one of my favorite topics, talking about voice actors. And let's get into our cast list, shall we? Before we get into that, just the first three we're going to talk about, well, all of them, for that matter, just legendary actors and voice actors. We have Dawes Butler as Yogi Bear, Snagglepuss, Huckleberry Hound, and Augie Doggy. We have Don Messick, you know, Hoobie Doobie Doo, voicing Boo Boo, Ranger John Francis Smith, and Herman the Hermit. John Stephenson, you know, probably best known as Mr. Slade on the Flintstones, or probably his best known role, I should say, voicing Doggy Daddy and Mr. Martyr Dingwell. Janet Waldo, voicing Cindy Bear and Mrs. Sophie Throckmorton. Marilyn Pfeiffer, voicing Snively. And Hal Smith, you know, Otis on, you know, the Andy Griffin Show, Town Drunk, voicing, Otto the Chef, and I said I wasn't going to stumble over myself, Otto the Chef and Santa Claus. It just won't be me saying the cast list unless I, you know, stumble and bumble and completely ruin somebody's name. But yeah, let's start with the top with Dawes Butler. I mean, again, all these classic voice actors, all these classic characters that Dawes Butler did. Yogi Bear, that he's been doing for years. Again, just wonderful, that classic Yogi Bear sound. You know, everybody tries to emulate, but nobody can get as perfect as Dawes did. You know, Snagglepuss and Huckleberry Hound. And again, he voices the characters perfectly. The delivery of the lines is wonderful and works for all the jokes that are done. There's just a warm voice that just encompasses you and, you know, makes you really care about the characters. You enjoy the characters. You find the characters fun and inviting, and you want to be around them more because of the greatness of the voice. Don Messick did a great job doing Boo Boo and Ranger Smith, and then also doing, you know, Herbert the Hermit. Again, these classic cartoon voices that are just wonderful to hear. John Stephenson did a great job. I think he was better as Mr. Dingwell in this special than Doggy Daddy, mostly because Doggy Daddy didn't have much, really. Those characters, they had their moments, but, you know, and the lines were delivered perfectly, but again, Dingwell had much more of a presence in the special, and, just some great lines in it, you know, from the, you know, again, that's getting into jokes, mind you, but did a just great job. Janet Waldo, just was classic as Cindy Bear, and just, I thought, did a great job with Mrs. Throckmorton. Marilyn Pfeiffer, did a great job of voicing Snively, voicing this character you just wanted to hate, because he was just such a brat. And mind you, that's the thing we're going to get into the story, because there's something with Snively that I love that happens in this special. It makes me love Mrs. Throckmorton a lot. Then you have Hal Smith. And, you know, Otto the Chef was there. He only had a couple lines. For me, the big thing he did was Santa Claus. And to me, his Santa Claus is sort of the classic voice I think about when I think of Santa Claus. You know, when I think of sort of the joyful and the cheerfulness, this is the type of voice I think of, and it was just perfect, and I love it. And with all these voice actors, you know, these are some legendary voice actors who I don't know if they get as much respect as they do as other voice actors. I mean, obviously, when you're talking about during these years, everybody talks about Mel Blanc. But, you know, these voice actors who not only voiced for Hanna-Barbera, I want to say it was Dawes or John Stephenson. I'm blanking, and I apologize. I'm sorry, it may have been Don. I'm trying to look at my notes now. I just had it as well. Ugh. But like Don Messick did Hampton J. Pig in Tiny Toons. It was Hal Smith who did like Owl and the original first four episodes of Winnie the Pooh. You know, he was also the horses in Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin. The main horse. So they've done other work for other companies, and again, when you look at all of, like, the stuff they've done, it's like, wow. I remember loving that character in that scene, and so on, and so on, and so on. The fact that they don't get as much respect as maybe Mel Blanc, and Mel Blanc, don't get me wrong, is probably the best. There's no denying Mel Blanc's greatness. But there are a lot of these great classic voice actors like Dawes Butler and Don Messick, who did the voice of Scooby-Doo. John Stephenson, who worked with Hanna-Barbera, who did all these voices that are just wonderful. You know, that are inspiration for the voice actors who work today. Is it fun to talk about Scott McNeil and Steve Bloom and Crispin Freeman and, you know, Lucy Christian and Greg Ayers and all these other voice actors who we love, and do we wish they would get more noticed by the entertainment industry? Absolutely. But let's not act like the voice actors from the past did just a horrible job and, you know, voice acting didn't exist until the 90s. Voice acting has been alive for years, and I don't know if these voice actors get nearly enough respect they deserve for just the fun characters they were able to bring to life. And it's so evident in the special. You feel like these characters are alive. You feel like these characters are real. And it comes completely from the voice, completely from the love and dedication that you hear from these voice actors in these characters. Even though they're doing whack, crazy, and fun stuff, it's just fun to listen to. With that, let's move on to story. And, of course, the main plot with story is, you know, again, it's Yogi's first Christmas. You know, he has to stay awake. I could talk about the continuity era here of, you know, again, they had Casper's first Christmas before this. So, but at the same point in time, you know, especially cartoons from Hanna-Barbera and Warner Brothers and the Looney Tunes and such, there's no continuity. People are like, well, it's a continuity era. It's like, no, it's not. It's a cartoon. You can just as easily say this took place before that happened. As much as you could sit here and say that there's a continuity era. And the fact of the matter is, again, like I said, there's no continuity. They're separate stories. You could just say that every cartoon is its sort of own universe and such, and to an extent, and when it comes to cartoons, especially Hanna-Barbera cartoons and Warner Brothers cartoons and early Disney cartoons, there's no point of continuity because there is no continuity. But because it's a cartoon. But again, you know what? It is a plot that makes sense. Again, Yogi Bear being a bear, he hibernates. So he's never experienced Christmas. So, you know, him getting to experience Christmas. With that being said, the one thing about the plot that, you know, and while I enjoy the story, it can kind of be misleading because you can think, oh, it's Yogi experiencing all the things of Christmas time, and they do have points of that. But it's not that type of story to where I'm discovering everything about Christmas. Obviously, Yogi Bear knows a little bit about Christmas in this. He knows certain things. He knows about the Christmas tree and things like that. I mean, they do have, like, certain things, like the mistletoe. And, you know, and of course, they also have other jokes that don't relate to Christmas, like the whole skiing bit. And we're going to be talking about comedy, because, again, that's really the whole point. The plot, to an extent, while important, is not really there to be focused on the plot. The plot there is a vessel for the comedy and the classic Hanna-Barbera hijinks to run through and allow for scenes. And the thing I'll say about this is that they do keep on the plot. They have all these scenes that, if you took them out of order and everything, may seem discombobulated, but they all fit and they all work and they all help to move the story along. They keep on pace with the story. Everything that happens, every sort of comedy bit and every emotion moves that story of Yogi Bear trying to make it through Christmas. And it's wonderful to watch. Now, as I said, it's a vessel. to sort of showcase the classic Hanna-Barbera hijinks. Whether it be a fall, whether it be a funny word or a misunderstanding. For instance, like I said, Yogi Bear's, again, part of the comedy is Yogi Bear continuously saved Mrs. Throckmorton, and Mrs. Throckmorton continuously promotes him. And of course, that whole bit, like, well, the last thing he could be promoted to is hotel manager. And Mr. Dingle would go, oh, maybe. Or, for instance, when they promote him to security guard, it's like, Rangers would go, oh, maybe I should hibernate for the winter. And again, the lines are delivered perfect and wonderful. Or, like I said, Yogi becomes a ski instructor, but he knows nothing about skiing. Mrs. Throckmorton doesn't care. Obviously, Mrs. Throckmorton is trying to collect insurance. Because she put a bear as a ski instructor because he somehow landed on his skis. And again, that whole bit, just so many jokes right from there that lead into one another. The whole thing of him trying to teach the others to ski when he knows nothing about skiing. He goes, show us how to shush. Okay. Shush, shh, shh. Or talking about what's a salam. Salam is short for salami. They're corny, but they're just fun. And of course, that being brought in because they had a ski jumping contest and Snively to try to, get up on Yogi undid his skis. And so the skis fall off, but he somehow lands on them, and the princess Mrs. Throckmorton, she makes him a ski instructor. Again, one leads into another, and it's all fun, it's all wacky, it's all crazy. And more importantly, it's sort of classic Hanna-Barbera wackiness. This is not the type of wackiness of Looney Tunes. Looney Tunes has that wackiness of, when in doubt, bonk him over the head. When in doubt, bonk him over the head. When in doubt, bonk him over the head. Does it sound like I'm repetitive here? Because that's sort of the Looney Tunes way. You have the protagonist and the antagonist, and the antagonist is trying to get the protagonist, but the protagonist is just a bit smarter and clonks him over the head. It was very different from that with Hanna-Barbera. A lot of times, the protagonist is the one who would have stuff happen to him. It's that switch, The protagonist is trying to do something, and something's always getting in his way. Whether it be Huckleberry Hound or Yogi Bear or Fred Flintstone. The antagonist is a lot of that times, with Yogi, it'd be like Ranger Smith. And you're like, oh, Yogi, when are you going to learn? It's off to the St. Louis Zoo with you! So it is that classic Hanna-Barbera style. But at the same point in time, it's also flipped a bit with the antagonist, in this case Snively and Herbert the Hermit, having all these plans and it always going awry. So it was interesting to see the script flip a bit with the hijinks. Just wonderful, wonderful, warm comedy at the end of the day. And it's just fun to watch. Last but not least, I think I'll talk about the pace of the film. Because the pace is just wonderful. It's nice and steady, and again, like I said, the story moves at a nice pace. And it may seem like they're going nowhere, but they really are going somewhere, and you realize the purpose of each scene by the end of the special. So it just had a nice pace, and it was just fun to watch. Which I think leads to my final thoughts. End of the day, it's a fun holiday special. I think it's worth checking out. If you love classic Hanna-Barbera, you will love this special. If you love warm Christmas specials like they used to be, you will love this special. And if you just want a sort of fun holiday cartoon, that for an hour and a half you'll enjoy watching. You'll love this special. So, for me, I give Yogi Bear's First Christmas a 4 out of 5. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative, the last Tom's Prerogative of 2013. Guys, I'm going to be taking a break. Probably the later half of the second week of January. Or possibly the third week. It's going to be when the next episode is going to come out. We'll get to that in a little bit. But yeah, if you have any comments or anything you want to send me of any kind to let me know what you think of the show, any hate mail, fan mail, anything at all, remember there are several ways you can contact the show. You can contact the show by our email account, which you can do at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also contact the show on our Facebook page by going to www.facebook.com/absolutionnetwork or by going to www.facebook.com and searching for the Absolution Network page. Like us, leave us a comment there. And of course, you can always leave a comment on the website itself that you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Also, remember to check out all the other 132 Productions content that you can find, which, of course, includes the Shaft Plus podcast, with, of course, Gina Chris, that you can find at www.shaftplus.com, the Otaku Momentum right here on the Absolution Network, and, of course, my Tokyo SOS podcast, a Godzilla podcast that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com, and, of course, my comic book crazy podcasting page, which you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. Also, make sure you check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site. That, of course, includes Michael Bailey and Fuse from the Lombox, Brad Douglas of Spider-Man Crawlspace, Steven Schleicher's Major Spoilers Podcast, and, of course, Scott Gardner's 22 Freaks Podcasting Network, among others. And that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Like I said, a bit of a hiatus, and when we come back, I'm going to review a show that, well, it's frustrating to me. A show I've said a lot of controversial things about. A show that I once did a video on that was an hour and a half. Had to split into two parts. Some of you might know which show I'm talking about. But it's time to revisit. As the first review of the new year is going to be Teppa Tenge Gurren Lagann. Strap yourself in, boys. It's about to get real. So until next time, my Toonami generation, find cover. It's gonna get too dangerous. Stay golden.
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom, signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.